Hey everyone, I know you've heard me speak about microdosing and how much I love it. And I'm talking about microdosing THC. I love it. And that's why I love our sponsor, microdose.com. Microdose gummies are incredible. They deliver perfect entry-level doses of THC that help you feel just the right amount of good. And when I mean just the right amount of good, I mean in so many situations. Anxiety, sleep, focus, pain, relaxation. There are so many different strains and they're really helpful. And I have recommended microdose.com to so many people. And you know what they say to me? Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Don't be afraid of microdosing. Go to microdose.com and you'll learn all about microdosing THC. These gummies feel amazing. They taste amazing. I have used them to get me into the zone I need to write. I've used them at night after a stressful day or a stressful show to relax. I have also said to family members, please take a gummy right now. And they've said, oh, good idea. So check it out. Check it out because they're fantastic. And I'm not like a big weed person. I mean, I used to be. And I do enjoy weed every now and then. But I love these gummies. And I take them with me everywhere. So check it out. Don't be afraid. They're all natural. They're fantastic. And you deserve it. So what are you going to do? You're going to do something that is fantastic. You're going to get 30% off your first order. 30% off. That's a lot. Plus free shipping today at microdose.com. Use promo code JUDYGOLD, JUDYGOLD. It's available nationwide. They deliver it to your door. That is microdose.com. Promo code JUDYGOLD for 30% off and free shipping. Do it. Go to microdose.com. Promo code JUDYGOLD. You deserve it. You deserve it. And you know what else? You're welcome.
Well, I don't see the point in waiting any longer. So let's bring her out. The star attraction. The one you came to see. Ladies and gentlemen, the one, the only, Ms. Judy Gold.
So, you graduate?
I briefly work at an advertising company that I hate, and they hate me. So I quit as they're firing me. Not even like, you can't fire me, I quit. It was almost like I was in the process of quitting when they fired me.
Were you writing ad copy?
I was a copywriter.
Can I ask what advertising agency?
It was this small one. At the time they had just changed their name to Boombox. I don't know if they still exist or not.
That's so funny. I can't imagine anyone hating you.
Here's the thing. One, I definitely made some lazy mistakes. So right. I will take ownership of mistakes. On their side, they would do these things that are very business worldy, which is half the reason I do this career is so I don't have to live that life. Where right. It'd be like, you know, because I was still doing stand-up. So I'd be like, hey, what time do you guys usually leave? And they're like, oh, like, you know, 6 o'clock. But if you're done with your work early, feel free to take off. And I was like, okay, great. Cool. And I didn't even leave early. I would like be there sitting and it'd be 6 o'clock, long done with my work and no one was leaving. And I'd be right. Like, okay, well, I'm going to go. And then after about a week of that, because I had to do open mics and
right.
spots, someone was like, hey, you keep leaving early. I'm like, oh, I was told I could leave at 6 or if my work's done. And right. they're like, yeah, but usually we wait until the boss leaves and then we leave. And I was like, oh, I'm not going to do that. Right. Okay. No. Because this dude hates his wife and kids. I'm not going right. to fucking yeah. hang
you
out here.
Because you don't feel like fucking going home. Tough. I finished my work.
Fucking. Yeah. And so
that's why none of us can ever work in offices like right. that.
And also, like, this was also, I think I was also a little arrogant because, like, this was when I was getting my first sense of heat in terms of right. any, like one of my stand-up clips, you know, it wasn't on Comedy Central itself, but it was on their website, which
right.
at that time felt like, and now would be the same thing. But at the time, I was like, you know what? It's not TV, but they know who I am.
Yeah, it's a validation. Okay. Right.
So I quit that, and then I go to Showtime, because Showtime's starting a video game company, and they need writers. And I was like, oh my God, dream's coming back. I'll do video games again. And 2 months in, the 2008 financial collapse happens. And so Showtime dissolves this branch of their company. I'm without a job. And then after 5 or 6 months, I find out SNL's hiring. And because they liked me as an intern, they hire me as a photo researcher. So I get to go back to SNL. And I do that for 2 years.
So you also had Zach Braff.
Zach Braff played me on SNL.
Yes, so he was you, used your name, and played you on, which is such a fucking, like, I don't think people realize what an honor, like, the fact that someone would write a bit for you on SNL. I mean, it's like, that's why I was always like, you know, Trump used to always be like, you know, upset that, he wanted SNL investigated and this. It's like, you know what an honor it is for someone to write a bit about you, you fat orange piece of fucking shit. But yeah.
Right. It was a really, really cool moment for me. It was also weird because I was an intern at the time that had to be in the control room. So I was like watching the director of the show and all these EPs watching these giant monitors as it happened and like everyone turning back to look at me. It was really funny. Yeah.
Oh, I love that.
Yeah.
Okay. So then you do that for 2 years. You, how do you get your next writing job?
So I'm at SNL for 2 years and I start to get a lot of jokes on the show. Even in the photo department, I get more and more and more and more.
Right.
To the point where it's like two jokes a show, multiple jokes a show sometimes. And at the end of the second season of this, I was, and Seth had like taken me with him to do the ESPN ESPY Awards as an actual staff writer. And so at the end of the second season, I was like, hey guys, I think you should hire me as a full writer because clearly you like my writing. And I get more on the show than some of the actual writers do.
Right.
And they weren't dicks about it, but they were kind of like, no, that probably won't happen for a little while. That's not really the way it always works. And
that's not how it works. I'm writing more jokes than the writers, but okay.
And so I heard about an opening at Nintendo of America for a writer and I was like, fuck it. And so I got a job at Nintendo.
And started writing video games,
I started writing video games for a couple of years. Yeah.
Was that fun?
It was
dream job.
It was it's a dream job. If I was no longer doing stand-up, if like I had quit doing stand-up and I was like, I'm still a writer, I'm just not doing stand-up, it would have been a job I would have stayed with forever.
Right.
It's amazing. Amazing company, super nice people, great place to work, great hour. It's totally unlike everything else.
Is everyone a total video game freak that works there?
Not everyone, which is fun though. Like our French Canadian translators at the time were these two like older women who are just moms who got a job being translators, but like, but it was like fun. Cause you get to like teach them the game and they'd be like, well, what does this mean? And you're like this. So you are like, it was like a cool back and forth.
Person stuff, right?
Yeah.
Okay. Then how do you get back into TV?
After a while I get a little, I'm doing better and better with stand up while I'm at Nintendo. I'm doing more of these outside gigs with, writing for bigger people, for award shows and whatnot. And I get offered a job that pays significantly more to write jokes for a video game website. In fact, the video game website I had written articles for in the past.
Okay.
And so they offer me this job. And the other thing about Nintendo, I should say, is that it's an amazing company, but because nobody ever quits,
right.
There's not a lot of room to grow. Right. So like there were people there who had been there 10 years longer than me and they made a shitload of money, but they just had my job title and did the same job I did.
Right. And you could have fake shot them and killed them. And then you could have gotten.
We made fun games. We made Mario Party. So I went to this website. Great. It was super fun. And that year is when I got New Faces. So 2012,
That is at Montreal, everyone. Montreal
New Faces.
Yeah.
And from New Faces, I got good press out of New Faces, and sort of that combination, Jimmy needing a monologue writer, Seth knowing me, it all coalesced into me getting hired.
How did you meet Jimmy? Did you meet him at SNL?
No, he, I actually started right after his last year at SNL. So we just missed each other. Yeah.
So you're writing for Jimmy.
Fucking,
like, this is like a storybook career.
I'm scared all the time. I should say every day I'm afraid. Never not afraid.
It's all going to go away, right?
All of it.
Join my fucking, I got a few years on it. And then Bill Nye Saves the World. You write for that.
Yep. I had been at Fallon about 3.5 years and, I'd done the job well. I appreciated it, but I was like, okay, I need a lot of people who I'd started with there had moved on to other jobs. And I was like, all right, I should probably try to advance in my career.
And you were writing the monologue, right?
I was writing monologue. Although sketch people would write monologue people would write sketches, but my focus was monologue.
And people don't realize that it is a grind. It is a grind, that you get up, you have to think in someone else's voice, you know? It's not like you're writing jokes for yourself, you're writing jokes that this other person would be able to deliver.
Yeah.
You're never not working. You're never not writing jokes, or everything you fucking do is, how does this relate to this show?
Right.
Yeah.
And I think like the image of monologue writers from TV is like three people sit around a table holding newspapers being like, what if Reagan said no? And you're like, no, it's just people pounding at a keyboard, terrified, writing line after line after line.
Right. So you leave there, and what's your next gig?
So do Bill Nye Save the World, which is, Bill is an amazing host. He's super fun. But it was, a 13-episode thing. So I knew it was a short-term job. I got to be head writer there. It got me out to L.A.
Old are you as a head writer of Bill Nye Saves the World?
32.
Are you pinching yourself?
Yeah. And I got to work, and as a kid, I really liked shows like Bill Nye the Science Guy and like Beakman's World. I was huge fans of those.
Right.
So this was fun. Yeah, I got to do that. And then 13 weeks in, job ends. President Trump gets elected. So that was a good month of not working.
Oh, I got to throw up. Hold on. Go ahead.
So then I do Adam Ruins Everything, which was awesome. I knew Adam back from the stand-up days.
Right.
It was super fun doing that show. Some people are weird about doing comedy that teaches, like educational comedy.
Right.
And I get why. But I actually enjoy it because I like fun facts. So I did that. And then I did another season of Bill Nye, sort of like the back end. Two seasons. I did seasons 2 and 3 at the same time. And then I did The President Show with Anthony Tamanic.
I love him. He was on the podcast. Yes.
Love him. He is a such a good dude. Yeah. Such a smart dude, too.
Yeah, really smart.
He knows everything.
I know. It's annoying.
It is.
He should go on Jeopardy. Okay.
He should. Okay, so I do that for 3 months. And I love it. That is the most fun I've ever had on a job. It wasn't the most stable job. It was on fire when I was there the whole time.
Right.
But it was the most fun I've ever had on any job I've ever worked on. Maybe even because it was on fire.
Right.
And we didn't know if it was getting renewed or not. And Sam B offered me a job. Sam knew me from Twitter and I interviewed there and they liked me.
So you got a job because of your fucking Twitter.
Yeah.
You're so good on Twitter. Okay. So yeah.
Thank you.
Did she call you? Or like what happened?
She contacted my agent.
She called people. Yeah.
Oh my goodness. What an asshole I am. So she contacted my agent and I liked the show already. It was this thing where I was like, well, I love the show I'm on and I'm loyal to it because I'm already there. And it was at the point where I called up my producers on President Show and was like, hey, I'm not trying to be shitty about this. I'm not trying to haggle with you.
Right.
Do you think we're going to be renewed? Because if so, I want to stay here. And if not, I need to let them know right now.
Right.
And they were like, just go, man. It ain't happening. And so I went to Sam B. And Sam B, whereas President Show is the most fun I've had, Sam B is the calmest, nicest. Even when Sam B's on fire, it does not even compare to when regular shows are regular.
Right.
Hey everybody, if you know me, you know I love my liquid IV and I love giving it to people and telling people about it. And It's part of my everyday life. I keep hydrated with liquid IV. I put it in my water bottle. Well, I have this one water bottle that I use only for liquid IV. And I put lots of ice in it and cold water because I like it very cold. And it keeps me hydrated and it's delicious. So thank you, Liquid IV. And I have to tell you, I've now given it to my son's girlfriend because, you know, they go out partying. You know what I'm talking about. And it has helped her immensely with her dehydration, that it's great for those nights where you know you're going to be having a few drinks. It's delicious. It comes in pear, white peach, grape, lemon lime. Also, there's a lemon ginger one that is great that has a little caffeine. I just love Liquid IV. And you need to keep hydrated. It's very important. It affects you on so many levels. So do yourself a favor. Keep hydrated in the best way possible. Some people hydrate to live. Some people live to hydrate. I think I live to hydrate. Liquid IV quenches your thirst faster than water alone. It has 3 times the electrolytes of leading sports drinks, 8 vitamins and nutrients for everyday wellness. And this is true. They have a sugar-free stick. They have Liquid IV sugar-free that Elisa, my lover, loves. I don't use the sugar-free. Whatever. But it's also been great for my traveling because I get very dehydrated on my airplane flights. So please, you've heard me say this multiple times. Go get your Liquid IV. You have to keep hydrated. It's very important. So however you hydrate, grab your Liquid IV hydration multiplier sugar-free in bulk nationwide at Costco or get 20% off your first order when you go to liquidiv.com and use code JUDYGOLD at checkout. That's 20% off your first order when you shop Better Hydration today using promo code JUDYGOLD, J-U-D-Y-G-O-L-D, at liquidiv.com. You're welcome.
I have 2 questions. Number one, I have to talk about, before we get into Sam B.
Yeah.
The cyclical greatness of SNL. I remember when it premiered. That's how old I am. And I have been through every cycle of what you contribute. I mean, there are so many obvious seasons that are like, writing's not that good. And yet it goes on too long like that. Like, what do you attribute that to?
One, contracts can sometimes be powerful.
Yeah.
And I think sometimes, you know, I think sometimes when you're gelling internally, you don't necessarily understand that you're not gelling as well externally. Cause you're like, it seems like everything's great. I feel right. Like it's great. And you know, live performance is different than watching at home. And sometimes like an amazing sketch for an in-person audience at home, you're like, ah, what the fuck?
I'm laughing and the audience is sitting there like—
Exactly.
Yeah. Like it's really whatever the in-studio audience is, right? And also, is it me or has the audience gotten really fucking young?
I think the audience has probably gotten young, although I haven't seen the audience in outside of like camera shots in forever.
Right. Well, COVID, but I'm just saying like, I don't know. I am looking for, I hope it gets better, but it's, and Lauren is, I love everyone on the show.
Yeah.
And I think they're so fucking talented. But sometimes I'm looking at the writing and I'm like, oh my God, this is like the best premise. And then I'm like, what?
Yeah.
Like, that's the hardest part for me is that it's all there and you go in a completely other direction.
Yeah. And sometimes, you know, that even comes from like editing on the floor when it's like, we need a minute. And you're like, I don't know where that minute comes from. They're like, okay, then we'll lose the whole thing.
Right.
You know,
so, and how involved is Lauren?
Very.
Yeah.
Very, very, like very, amazing. Very, very.
Since day one. I mean, it's fucking incredible. One.
Yeah.
Okay. So you start working for Samantha Bee. Now you are brilliant on Twitter. I have to say one of my favorite tweets of yours is the Ben Shapiro tweet.
Oh my God. People I hadn't spoken to in a year texted me like I sold a movie.
And Can you tell everyone? It's so fucking great. Because he was talking about, yeah, go ahead.
Okay, so this was back during the after the Capitol riot, and there was that photo of the guy who had zip ties, as you remember. And he was in a military uniform, and they were the type of zip ties that are also used for handcuffs, which is a slightly different kind than you use to like tie up cords.
Right.
This one woman tweeted something along the lines of like, I don't know anyone who has like that many zip ties or like why anyone would have that many zip ties. And Ben Shapiro then tweeted like, I get like something shitty at her where it's like the liberal media doesn't know that everyone has zip ties.
Right.
Something like that. And I replied, and I'm going to misquote it, but it was something like, hey, Ben, usually I come at these things with a joke, but I just want to approach this honestly. You know that there's a difference between a zip tie held by a paramilitary force invading the Capitol and a zip tie held by your wife tying you to a chair so you can watch her fuck other men. And it, and people were like, it exploded in a way. Cause like in my head, I was like, I don't know. There's here we go.
It's fucking great. I mean, I love it. As far as writing, you know, you're now the head writer of Samantha Bee, which is, you know, that you're going to work for the rest of your life. I hope you realize you will always be employed. I know, I've been in this business a long time. And hopefully one day you'll write for Judy Gold. But
hire me, man. I'm up for hire. I am a mercenary person.
You're fucking great. Anyway, Samantha Bee had to apologize for her feckless. You were there during the feckless.
I was there. Yeah.
Pissed me off.
Yeah.
That fucking orange fucking piece of fuck and shit and duty and scum can say whatever the fuck he wants. Pocahontas.
Oh, yeah, you know, anything.
I'm sure she didn't want to apologize.
No, but there's so much pressure coming at you from every angle on that, you know, and she's a nice lady. Like, she's not someone who's like, she has a thick skin because she's gone through so much, but she's not someone who's like, fuck them, bring it on. She's someone who like wants to go to bed at 6 o'clock.
Right.
Here's, I'll get back to it, but like, here's how different Sam is than every other host. She brings leftovers to work.
Oh.
Do you get what I'm saying? And you've been in entertainment long enough to know exactly what I mean.
Yes. Oh, that's so sweet and loving.
She's a human, she is a true human being in an industry full of fucking monsters.
Right.
And, you know, but you get so much pressure on every side and you start hearing, you know, about like, you know, is TBS going to lose sponsors? Are people going to lose jobs? Like, you know, there's a point when you worry that she's worried that like, you know, 100 people are about to lose their jobs.
It's a responsibility. Yeah.
Yeah. And, you know, there's a point where you kind of, there's no choice. Like as much as like people are like, I can't believe you backed down. It's like, look, when there's more jobs on the line than yours, it's sometimes hard to not back down.
Right.
What's funny is about that is I distinctly remember that day for two reasons. One, the normal warm-up comic wasn't there. So me and another writer did warm-up and it was really fun. And everyone was like, you guys were so great. And it felt like a great stand-up set. And I was like, oh my God. And in therapy that day, I talked about how proud I was of that.
Right.
Because I hadn't done warm-up in forever. So I was a little nervous.
Right.
And I remember in the writer's room, we passed by that joke with nothing. And again, that joke was written by a woman. The show is run by a woman. It's hosted by a woman. Passed right by it. And we had a 5-minute conversation about the next joke, which is, I think it said something like, Ted Cruz looks like a child of incest. Like it was something far meaner. It was 1,000 times meaner. And we were like, is this okay? Is this all right? No, we should change it. Ted Cruz. And like, we talked about it. And the joke right before it was the one that got us in trouble.
Were you shocked?
I was. I was shocked at how big it got. I thought that it would be like this, like, how dare you type thing. Like when we made fun of PragerU, they sort of had like a, we hate you so much, we're going to give you 500,000 views on YouTube.
Right.
It just kept going though. It kept growing and growing. I honestly think that it kept growing partially because Roseanne just had hers. And I think that it was almost like this, like, uh-oh, we got one too, you know?
Right. Did that make you guys more paranoid? Do you think it made you more like, because that's what I feel like is happening with all of us.
Yeah.
It's like, normally I'd be like, oh, I'd get on the stage. And I think most comics and writers would be like, oh, well, just fuck it. Try it. Doesn't work. It doesn't. But we can't do that anymore. It's like, now you're like, oh no, my whole life will be over. I will be a piranha because I tried to make someone laugh and it didn't work yet. Motherfuckers are sex trafficking kids.
We didn't get, it's not like we like moved off the people we normally target, but we definitely were like more careful. Like, is this going to get us death threats today?
Right. You know? And that's what they want.
That's what they want.
And then they act like they're the big, you know, they're the big free speech people.
And we did get through it after like two shows. You know, we sort of got through that like post trauma of like, what can we do? What is this okay?
Right.
Like a couple shows later, we were fine again. Cause we're comedians, we're comedy writers, we're emotionally lazy people. We're not going to change. Yeah. So, but it definitely shook us. It shook us for like a week or two, definitely.
Which is, that is terrorism. I feel like we're being terrorized.
We are. And I think it's harder because it's almost like the people terrorizing you are the ones who are saying you're doing it.
Right.
So they're like, you're censoring us. And that's why we're going to send our people after you.
Right.
And it's like, no, it's the publisher of Dr. Seuss who made this decision. Yell at them. Don't buy a lot of their books as you just did.
Right.
Why are you mad at me about it? I'm not the publisher of Dr. Seuss.
Yeah, right. You said that you think COVID gave writers more leeway to be weird. That because you didn't have an audience, that you felt more freedom now this past year. Because you, first of all, Samantha Bee was one of the first shows to get COVID, right?
Yeah.
And you get shut down, and then you're doing a show without an audience, and you were able, you felt more freedom, you said.
Yeah, I mean, in the panic of it, we were kind of like, okay, how do we adjust our rhythms? Because you get
used to it. Oh my God, it's so, I talk about that all the time, that it's so musical.
Yeah.
You don't, every audience laughs differently. So do you do a tag? Do you not do a tag? When do you start the next joke? What? Yeah.
Right. Exactly. And so without that, we had to refigure out a lot of the rhythms, and a lot of it was, you know, there's more, we have slightly more room for more jokes, more information without the audience, which I guess is a silver lining. You know, but at the same time, like when we were writing for the show for the audience, we were like, this one might be too sad. Or for example, our audience doesn't always like when we criticize a Democrat if they do something wrong.
Right.
And so sometimes, you know, you have to navigate those waters a little harder, you know, just to make sure you're like, no, we're on your side. It's just this person did something we should talk about.
Right, yeah. And we're not perfect, okay?
We're not perfect either. Yeah. And it's important to acknowledge that. But, you know, audiences, especially back in the age of Trump, were very sensitive to that sort of thing.
Right.
And so, you know, it's easier for us to sometimes make like a joke about, I don't know, a Democrat. I can't think of anything off the top of my head.
Cuomo, but go ahead. Yeah.
Cuomo, like we did a whole Cuomo piece. And I think we were able to go a little harder than we might have with a regular audience. You know, but we can do sadder jokes. We can do jokes that like make us in the room laugh really hard and go, you know what? Fuck it. We're putting it on TV. It's fine.
That is the way the Smothers Brothers were. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like that was the old age of comedy. Like, you know what? I don't fucking care. You know? And it's like now they have too much fucking power, you know?
Yeah. I mean, here's the thing though, I miss having an audience because people cheer for you.
Of course.
I mean, you know, I'll also say that it was Kristen and me. We were hired as head writers 3 weeks before the pandemic started. So we were learning to do this job as we were also learning to do the show remote.
Wow.
Hey everyone, I have a new sponsor and I love them. They're called OneSkin. OneSkin. And what is OneSkin? It is skincare. Skincare that is simple. I guess that's the perfect word. It's simple. It you don't have to put on 18,000 products while you're like dying to get in bed. OneSkin was founded by 4 PhDs dedicated to skin longevity. And this stuff proves you don't need a complicated routine to achieve better skin. Their supplements They're topical, and they make it easy to help your skin stay younger and healthier without putting all that other shit, I said shit, on your face. And the secret of OneSkin is their OS1 peptide. It's the first ingredient scientifically proven to reduce the buildup of senescent, did you like that? Senescent cells, those little cells that contribute to skin aging. And the fewer amount of cells that they're called zombie cells, that means healthier, younger looking skin, fewer wrinkles, fewer lines, reduced age spots, natural barrier. And that is very important, especially now it's spring and summer and you're going to be out in the sun. So, you know, you love your skin, so do something for it. Return it the favor of having skin and treat it nicely. Does that make sense? Well, so I'm very excited about OneSkin. And I haven't gotten my product yet, but I am really, really, really looking forward. So I'm going to be giving you an update on my skin, but you should do it with me. For a limited time, our listeners will get an exclusive 15% off their first OneSkin purchase using the code JUDYGOLD, JUDYGOLD, when you check out at oneskin.co. That's oneskin.co. And it's oneskin.co. You really, really need to invest in your skin. It's very important. So OneSkin, you're going to do this today. You're going to go to oneskin.co. It is more than skincare. It's about skin longevity, targeting the root causes of aging to help you look and feel your best at every age. Get started today with 15% off using code JUDYGOLD at oneskin.co. That's 15% off oneskin.co with code JUDYGOLD. After you purchase, they'll ask you where you heard about them. Please support our show and tell them we sent you. It's time to expect more from your skincare routine. Invest in the health of your skin with OneSkin. You're welcome.
You wrote a book about Silent Hill 2. It's out now. Who do you want to read this book? I mean, I was like looking at the book and I was thinking, okay, this is fascinating. And I know nothing about this.
Yeah.
This video game. Did they ask you to write it? Did you?
I became friends with the head of the publisher. It's this independent publisher, Boss Fight right. Books. He was like, well, if you ever have any ideas for them, we'd love to have you write one. And I was like, oh yeah, sure. And I pitched a couple of ideas and this is the one that he really liked the most. And so I got to write a whole book, which is crazy. It's a tiny book.
A video game and these characters Eddie and Angela, your lover.
I would say if you're a video game fan, there's a lot about the development of it. There's a lot about the divide culturally between the West and the East in terms of what horror is and in terms of the fact that it's a Japanese game about an American town. And if you're a horror fan, horror fan in general and you just like the genre, there might be something in there for you.
Scares
or me. If you're bored and there's nothing left.
Right, which is what's happening. You love to go to the Museum of Natural History.
I do. I live like 30 blocks from it.
And that is your go-to. I remember I used to bump into Geraldo at Barnes & Noble all the time. That was his go-to place.
Yeah.
That's your go-to. I got to get away.
I got to get away.
You love the dinosaurs.
Love the dinosaurs. I love sort of like the quiet spaces where you can just sit on a bench. You know, it's not like loud. It's just sort of like background noise. You know, it's almost like being on the subway a bit where you can like, it's almost easier to read because you just feel like you're supposed to be quiet and just let people do their thing.
Yeah. You're an amateur chef.
Very bad at it. Very bad at it, but I'm trying to be.
Where's your collection of old video games?
My collection, it's up there on the shelf. I could like pull some down, but.
Like how old? Do you have Tetris?
I have Tetris. I definitely have Tetris.
Do you ever play them?
Yeah. No, I play those games all the time. I definitely play the old games.
How many do you have?
A lot. I have a lot. A lot. More than 100.
Wow.
Yeah.
Oh my God. I love how nerdy you are.
Oh, thank you.
First of all, I just have to say, you are such a delight and you're so funny and good. You're good. You're like, you're a good person. Like, I don't know. I just love you. I would have been friends with you in high school. It would have been the two of us.
I appreciate that.
No, I'm telling you, you would have been my, After Samantha Bee, which will never be going off the air.
Yeah.
Hopefully. What do you want to, like, do you want to just continue on this path? Do you want to be creating bigger things? Are you, want to get married? Do you want to have kids? Do you...
I don't know what I want to do next. You know, ironically or not ironically, coincidentally, I don't know. You know, I've checked off a ton of goals. So, you know, so I think, you know, I think I'd love to do like a children's show sometime. I'd love to like sell a cartoon or something. You know, I like the genre. I like late night. If I stayed at late night for a while, that's not bad either. I'm, you know, I'm good at it. And it's sort of what I did.
I want to sell a cartoon so bad because, and I know exactly what I want it to be about. And it, you can get away with so much more. You can be so much edgier because they're not real. Yeah. Cartoons are fucking great. Okay. So I always ask two questions. Ready?
Great. Hit me.
I'm very into mental health, anxiety, depression. I don't even know how I made it this far today. What do you do for your mental health? I'm on antidepressants. I work out and I meditate, but today I did a 3-minute because I was just like, I can't listen to your fucking voice anymore. Yeah.
I am also on antidepressants.
What do you want?
I am on Wellbutrin.
Why do you want Butrin? And Luvox. But do you like the Wellbutrin?
I think so. I'm always like, do that hall of mirrors in your head thing where you're is it working or do I only think it works? Or do I think it works because it's working, you know?
Right.
It seems okay so far. I'm also on Lamotrigine because I am bipolar 2.
Yeah.
You know, I've been, ever since the pandemic started, I've exercised every day. And I probably smoke a little more weed than I should, you know, at night. But otherwise,
you gotta do what you gotta do. It's fucking hard. You know, I'm in the middle of changing my meds, like, because I'm really sick of, because mine make me fucking fat, and I'm sick of it, and I'm just went through menopause. It's like annoying. It's like I want to be skinny and happy, and like you can't do both with these fucking meds. Shit.
Right. Yeah.
Do you ever get to the point where you're like, well, I'm sure you do. Like, I don't want to take these meds. No one in my family was taking this many pills at my age. You know, my grandmother, my mother.
Right. You know, on one hand, I would like to not have to take these pills.
Right, right.
And, you know, I did survive before without them. However, so I don't think like I would necessarily, it would be like fatal. However, I wasn't doing great beforehand. So I don't think that going back to that, like, I don't think I've gained the knowledge of how to mind trick my way into being okay without.
Right. Because it's chemical. It's a.
Yeah.
It's interesting because you have to treat it like you're a diabetic, you know, and that's it. Yeah.
You do. And it's hard because a lot of people, I think, honestly, because fucking from, you know, 1980 to 2005, any idea of therapy or psychiatry was treated as like, either a bad guy in a movie or the joke character.
Right, right. Yeah, I totally agree with you. And I don't fucking, if you're my friend, I don't want to hear about how you got off your meds and you feel great. Go fuck yourself, okay? I don't want ever want to hear that.
Just went vegan, man. That's it. You just go vegan?
No, I just, everyone's always like that. You know what? If you cut out the gluten, everything in your life will change. No, it won't change.
No, it won't. I'm still me.
I will still hate my fucking self, okay?
I was talking to my therapist about this, and then I know we're almost out of time. But she was like, if you talk to yourself as a kid, what would you say?
Right.
And so I like did two sides of one conversation where I was like, you know, I've done this and done this, but you know, I've gone through this and that. And I was like, yeah. And the kid's like, okay, so you've like written for TV and you've been on TV and have made video games and you've worked for all the, you've done all these things. Yeah. And it's like, are we happy? And I'm like, oh no, totally not. You are the same that you are now.
Right. Right. It's so true. It's like, it doesn't, you know, your work accomplishments are not going to wipe your ass at the Hebrew Home for the Aged. Sorry.
No. I'm going to be a bitter old man.
That's right. You're going to be funnier for it. Now I call the podcast Kill Me Now because all I say it about 100 times a day. Everything fucking aggravates me.
Right.
What pisses you off more than anything in the entire world? Like that, you know, really makes your makes you crazy.
I know that the actual answer isn't like inequality, but I just want to have the good person answer first. So, like, you know, war. In actuality, I don't like when people insist on financial advice. Now, if it's brought up once, that's fine. But once there is a no, and it's insisted upon, it starts to make me, and I don't know why. I think it's because my parents had so many money troubles when I was a kid.
Right.
And they fought so much, but it's always like, and it's not that I don't, like once in a while someone's like, and I'm like, oh, that's interesting. What do you mean by that? But if it's like, you gotta, you know what, man, you should just buy a condo and then like rent it out. And I'm like, I don't want to talk about this. Nor, no, listen to me, man. I don't know.
So annoying with the Bitcoin.
Yeah.
And like my son Ben is really into the Robin Hood bullshit, you know, like investing shit. And he's like, mommy, I bought 10 shares of Tesla. And I'm like, no, Ben, you don't understand. And I'm like, I do understand. I have other shit to do. And you're 19. That's what I understand.
Right.
And I don't have time for this shit. It's like, I know. And these people that just want to make money and not fucking do anything.
Yes.
You know?
Yes. And also, like, these things like Bitcoin, NFT, they use up so much computer power that they make up, like, I think a six, like no, 0.6% of the pollution on Earth, which is a lot. 0.6 doesn't sound like a lot, but that's a lot.
Is that true?
It's all the computer processing. I read that. Someone in the comments of this, if there's comments, may say that's not true, in which case I'm incorrect.
No, you're never incorrect, Mike.
Thank you.
Mike, I cannot thank you enough. Your parents did a fantastic job.
Thank you.
Everyone follow Mike on Twitter. You will not be sorry.
Thank you.
You're fucking great on Twitter. And a lot of people are not great on Twitter.
That's true. That's true.
I don't know. I can't thank you enough. You were such a delight. I'm so happy for your success.
Thank you.
And
this was great. This was super fun.
Really? I love you. You're so fucking smart.
Thank you so much for listening to part two of Kill Me Now with Mike Drucker. Kill Me Now, my wonderful podcast, is produced by Laura Vogel, edited by Colin Schmeling, and would not even exist without the help. All right, it would exist, but it wouldn't, you know, it'd be a lot harder without the help of Brittany Jo Sowards. Now, if you like the podcast, which, okay, I say this every week, just go, please go and subscribe and please give me 5 stars, begging. Really, it helps other people find the podcast. It helps my ego, which is very important, as you know. Also, you can get my incredible book anywhere books are sold. It's called Yes, I Can Say That When They Come for the Comedians. We're All in Trouble. It's not like I don't mention it every single podcast. And if you don't have it, there's something really wrong with you. Okay? Go to my website, judygold.com. There you will find actually links to multiple places where you can purchase my book or my CDs or albums or whatever you want to call them, or cassette tapes or 8-tracks, wherever you listen to your music. And also, you can find out where I'm working and what I'm doing and just read all about me and follow me on social media at Judy Gold, JEWDYGOLD, because I'm a Jew. I'll share my intimate thoughts, and you really need to be aware of those to make your life better. So anyway, thank you again all so much for listening. Please wear a mask. Please be safe. Please get vaccinated. Please, 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 please. And as we always say, so long.
And everything was wonderful. I'll see you soon. Thank you for the visit. So long.